The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
A few minutes ago, we were talking to Paul Rogers about the conduct of the war overnight and wider issues. But as that war unfolds on the ground in the Middle East, another battle is raging online. From manipulated satellite imagery to fabricated videos of missile strikes, convincing AI fakes in the theatre of war are spreading faster than ever. Eileen Cullity is Associate Professor at Dublin City University and Deputy Director of the Institute for Media, Democracy and Society and is with me now. Eileen, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
So seeing is not believing anymore, or should not be.
No, but it never has been with warfare. So the concept of information warfare is a very old one, and states at war always try to control the narrative.
I mean, I was thinking during the programme about this item and about Lord Haw Haw, you know, Germany calling William Joyce, and he was hanged for his pains in 1946, I think. So they would use some things which were known knowns and embellish them with propaganda stuff, which was stuff that simply was not true.
Exactly. And even going back to the Crimea War and the First World War, there was a lot of fake footage and fake imagery and doctored imagery and a lot of censorship as well, of course. So that's one part of the dynamic. And the states that are involved in this conflict, so Iran, the US, Israel, the Gulf states, they're all quite adept at mobilizing online narratives to suit their interests. But there's a separate dynamic, which is online platforms themselves, because they reward people for having accounts that generate lots of views. So on the one hand, you have people who are aligned to those states. And on the other hand, you just have pure opportunists who are just trying to get as many views as possible to make money.
But there are people then who are addicted to war porn, aren't there? You know, they just like to see the explosions, the bombs, the dismemberment of people. And those people feed those algorithms, don't they?
Yeah, and again, this is something we saw a lot with the first Iraq war, which is around the time when video sharing actually became very prominent. Also, the Syrian war, it was quite prominent as well. Unfortunately, there's a lot of very sick people out there.
So what to do about it? I mean, if you look closely at some of the AI-generated stuff, it may indicate in a small way on the site that this is AI-generated. Where do we find that indication?
The standard advice is that people should look closely at the images, you know, slow down a video, zoom in on it. The journal.ie actually had a very good piece on this recently where they explained some of these videos, if you zoom in on them, you'll notice that people have three hands and cars have six wheels and that kind of stuff. But the problem is like most of us don't have the time or the inclination to be freeze framing videos and looking for these kind of oddities and disruptions. So everything about the online world is speed. But then it takes a lot of time to actually verify and check things.
Now, when we were looking at early AI fabrication, maybe of famous people and so on, you could watch them and you could see how clunky it was, that the lip syncing wasn't perfect. But as AI has perfected itself, they're not so clunky anymore.
Exactly. They're quite convincing. And most of the videos we've seen are quite convincing. Somebody who knows what to look for, somebody who is trained to investigate, they will be able to determine. But it often takes a few days. So somebody like Malachy Brown at the New York Times has a whole unit where they are trained and dedicated to this, you know, but that's days later. And we live in this rapid media world where the story just moves on very quickly.
Is Malachy related to Vincent? I think he is.
I think he is.
Yes. He is.
And interestingly, he started working at Storyful, which Mark Little set up, in response to the Syrian war, where all these videos were being posted online, but nobody was verifying them.
Now, you know that old maxim, you can fool some of the people some of the time, you can fool some of the people all of the time. And occasionally, they say you cannot fool all of the people all of the time. And I think that's a given, because there will be the Malachy Browns and the BBC units and so on who will not be fooled. But if the generality of the populations are fooled, that achieves the propaganda effect, does it not?
Yeah, and I don't even know if it's about people being fooled. I think the big concern, not just with, say, war media, but just media in general, information in general, is that people are going to become extremely cynical about everything. And that's the way the internet has now become. We're just bombarded with scams and sloppy content that people will just pull back, because there's a huge burden on people to go and investigate, to go and decide, who do I trust to give me information?
Now, Trump was the one who, I think, coined fake news. And you could see how forward-thinking he was, because eventually when, and I think it's inevitable, there will be evidence coming out from the Epstein files which will implicate him. And a decade ago would have been absolutely convincing. He will try to persuade the world, this is not real.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. There was a very academic, esoteric kind of concept around the first Gulf War back in the 1990s that like the war did not take place because it was just all image based and that reality is whatever is on your TV screen at the time. And I think we're now living that reality and the Trump administration embodies that. As long as from their point of view, as long as you can control the narrative, control the image of something, they really don't care about the reality behind it.
Now, conspiracy theories abound, and one of the, I suppose, the most famous one is that the moon landing didn't take place, and it was celebrated cinematically in a movie called Capricorn 1, where the moon landing was staged on a large film set. To what extent is the internet kind of encouraging more and more conspiracy?
There is a lot of people debated this in the sense of, did the internet encourage more conspiracies or did it just reveal that lots of people actually believe conspiracies? But, you know, previously they were just down in the local pub and didn't have lots of people to join up with. Undoubtedly, what we're seeing now is just a massive rise in manipulated content, fake content. And I think maybe what goes under the radar a little bit is that there's a huge influence industry where you can mobilize entire bot networks to push particular agendas. And it's not just about war and conflict and politics. It's also across sports and the entertainment industry. We saw this recently in Ireland with the IRFU and the racism. So this is just something that people have to be very, very conscious of, that the online world, the media world is very inauthentic.
And that's a problem. I mean, I have found when I used to use just Google without any AI input into it, I got a list of things and I could go down through them. Obviously, people paid to be on page one. But if you went a little bit deeper, page two, page three, you could make your own choices. AI tends to try to make those choices for you, and you might get all sorts of spurious content in response to your inquiry. And this is called AI hallucinating. Or sometimes it's not hallucinating, it's actually deliberately misleading.
Yeah, the AI summaries are a particular problem because a lot of the value is generated by, say, news media, researchers, whoever, and they have websites and content. But then the AI summaries just take that and present it to people. So news sites across the world are reporting massive declines in people going to their websites, which means then they can't sell advertising. And this is like a hyperdrive of what we experienced in the 1990s, where these big tech companies are pretty much just determining how the game plays out.
Interesting text here. Yanis Varoufakis has spoken about only being able to identify his own speech as being AI generated because of the shirt he was wearing, which he does own indeed, but it was located at another property that he uses in a different city. That's from David. So that's extraordinary. They took an image from somewhere when he was wearing that shirt and put it on him and had him delivering a speech that was completely made up somewhere else. I mean, yes, and that's the only way he could identify that it was fake.
Yes, we had a very frightening presentation in DCU a year ago where the head electoral register from the state of Pennsylvania explained that she had to come up with code words for her children. So in the event that she was kidnapped, they would know because they couldn't trust the voice. The voice was very convincing that it would sound like her. So they had to come up with these code words.
So what do you tell your students? I mean, you're trying to educate a generation into being, the best word is skeptical and permanently skeptical.
Yeah, and critical thinking, I think, is the important thing. So awareness is very important, that people are aware that there are lots of agendas out there. People are aware of what's possible. I think, you know, we tend to think about different age groups as being very tech savvy or not tech savvy. One of the problems with younger people is because they just grew up surrounded by technology, they often don't know how to question it. There's a lot of awareness that, you know, AI fakes are out there. I think the bigger thing I'm more concerned about going into the future is the scale of media capture that's going on. So huge amounts of US media are now bought up and owned, controlled by Trump cronies. So this is a totally new dynamic.
And the latest being CNN, and that's, I mean, however critical we might be about the lack of rigor in some of the questioning by CNN journalists, like you're screaming at the telly, ask a follow-up question. Why don't you ask Trump about the accusations of rape of a 12-year-old? Why don't you ask him about that? And it doesn't happen. But they happen to be. Maybe MSNBC is still surviving out there, but it's a losing battle by the looks of things.
Very much so. And the local media is quite bought up. And then independent media outlets like NPR, they're systematically trying to defund them. This is happening in lots of authoritarian countries. So it's very hard to tell people that there is some media outlets they can trust. But I think that means reliable and credible media outlets need to do the work to demonstrate to people that they can be trusted.
Eileen, thank you very much for joining us. Eileen Cullity is Associate Professor at Dublin City University and Deputy Director of the Institute for Media, Democracy and Society.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.